If I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning, I'd hammer in the evening all over this land. I'd hammer out danger, I'd hammer out warning, I'd hammer out love between my brothers and my sisters all over this land. If I had a bell, I'd ring it in the morning, I'd ring it in the evening, all over this land. I'd ring out danger, I'd ring out warning, I'd ring out love between my brothers and my sisters, all over this land. If I had a song, I'd sing it in the morning, I'd sing it in the evening, all over this world. I'd sing out danger, I'd sing out warning, I'd sing out love between my brothers and my sisters, all over this land. I got a hammer, and I've got a bell, and I've got a song to sing all over this land. It's a hammer of justice, it's a bell of freedom, it's a song about love between my brothers and my sisters all over this land, all over this land. I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show, and we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And it's a listener-supported station, so make sure you head on over there to freedomslips.com or to revolution.radio. Show them some support. Show them some love. I am proud now to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer.
Hi, Chuck. Tonight we welcome these special guests, Jim Fetzer, Thomas Wortman, Richard Flamer, Philip Ferruccio, and Frank O'Dell. So this Thursday evening, we are gathering for the New American Dream Radio Show in Fort Lauderdale, in Port Orange, in Des Moines, Iowa, in northern Minnesota, in Madison, Wisconsin, in Cleveland, Ohio, and wherever you are. My recommended list for April 11th, the April issue of Penn Magazine, is available at pennmagazine.us. Penn Magazine is named in honor of Penn Jones Jr., a small-town journalist, newspaper reporter, editor, publisher, one of the first researchers into the John F. Kennedy murder, an honest newsman who did not lie to us. Penn Magazine is P-E-N-N magazine.us. People will never, ever rebel as long as they're successfully propagandized. Caitlin Johnstone. Since the dawn of civilization, powerful individuals have controlled the stories people tell themselves about who they are, who's in charge, how a good citizen behaves, what groups should be loved, what groups should be hated, and what's really going on in the world. When you study what we call history, you're mostly just reading the ancient proto-propaganda of whatever kingdom happened to win the last war during that period of time. This continues to this day. We fill our children's heads with lies about how the world works, how the government works, how the media works. Modern schooling is essentially mainstream media in a building. It promotes authorized narratives day in and day out to ensure that children will have a reaction of cognitive dissonance and rejection when confronted with information which contradicts those narratives. This ensures that no matter how bad things get, no matter how severely our spirits are crushed by end-stage metastatic neoliberalism, no matter how many stupid, pointless wars we're duped into, no matter how much further we are drawn along the path toward extinction via climate chaos or nuclear war, we will never revolt to overthrow our rulers. Also recommended on Democracy Now!, Kings Bay Plowshares peace activists face 25 years for action at U.S. nuclear submarine base. A group of peace activists have been jailed for over a year before trial for entering the Kings Bay Naval Submarine Base in Georgia last April to protest U.S. nuclear weapons. The action took place on April 4th, 2018, the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King's assassination. Armed with hammers, crime scene tape, and baby bottles containing their own blood, seven anti-nuclear activists secretly entered Kings Bay, one of the largest nuclear submarine bases in the world, under the cover of night. Their goal was to symbolically disarm the six nuclear ballistic missile submarines kept there. Each submarine carries 20 Trident thermonuclear weapons. 1 year after this historic action, three of the Plowshare activists remain jailed in Georgia. The other four are out on $50,000 bond with electronic ankle monitors. All seven face up to 25 years in prison for their actions. For more, go to Democracy Now! And this by Professor Keyes Vander Pilz. Academic Corruption, the Israeli Lobby, and 9/11. Why I have resigned my emeritus status at the University of Sussex. Did Israelis blow up the Twin Towers with the help of Zionists and the U.S. government? I think it is highly likely. Therefore, I will not accept the humiliating sanctions imposed on me on March 1st, which is a violation of my freedom of speech, and more specifically, of my academic freedom as a scholar. And finally, recommended, How to Spot a False Flag, Dr. Jim Fetzer and Dr. Catherine Horton. Find it at 153news.net, a four-part series.
Our first guest of the evening is Philip Ferrugio. Phil joins us each week from Port Orange, Florida. And from his home there, he is on all over the internet. He posts news stories on many of sites. Please be sure to check for him in Google. That's Philip Ferrugio, F-A-R-R-U-G-G-I-O. And with no further ado, here is Philip Ferrugio with It's the Empire, Stupid.
Okay, Goebbels is alive and well in America. Peter Longerich's 2015 biography, Goebbels, instructs well how history can and does repeat itself. Like many of the neocon ex-lefties who loaded up the Bush Sr. and Bush Jr. administrations, Goebbels was at first a true socialist, perhaps even a Marxist sympathizer. As a young novelist and later journalist, he had a real dislike for the fat cat capitalists who he and others from both the political left and right blamed for Germany's fall from grace. When he found Adolf Hitler, despite his many disappointments about Hitler from his diary entries, including the fact that he fervently believed that Hitler was in love with Goebbels' fiance Magda, and perhaps vice versa, Goebbels joined the new Führer cult. As with many others in economically and culturally depressed Germany, Goebbels was enamored with the man he referred to as the boss. Take that, Bruce Springsteen. The need for a messianic leader, actually a dictator, was very prevalent among many in the NASD, a.k.a. Nazi Party. So much so that nothing else mattered as to the actual policy versus actual power. As long as Hitler hammered home pride in the fatherland, Volk family values, and rejection of the Versailles Diktat, Goebbels forgave Hitler's indecision and on other issues. Of course, Goebbels' bitter hatred towards all things Jewish kept him on a course that Hitler himself had steered for so long. Matter of fact, in the biography, we learn how even Hitler had to slow Goebbels down at times and show more patience and wait for the opportune moments to strike hard against the Jews. Joseph Goebbels was a master in the use of propaganda. He knew what Edward Bernays accomplished in our nation through his introduction of propaganda into commercial and then political advertising. Without Bernays' skills, the United States may never have been even entered into World War I. Goebbels could have gotten lots of his ideas right out of Bernays' 1928 book, aptly entitled Propaganda. Jingoistically, one cannot view any films showing the Nazi regime at work without noticing the abundance of flags and banners everywhere. Additionally, Goebbels' use of pomp and circumstance with the trumpets and horns and, of course, the drum beats combined with the marches and uniforms was very effective. Why? Well, during troubled times, all that is needed to indoctrinate the populace are repetitive sound bites and slogans used over and over and over again. Did not Mr. Trump use such populist propaganda on a great segment of the populace fed up with the economic plight and the absence of good jobs? Of course, all successful propaganda must have scapegoats ready in the wings to blame most of this on, with his savior standing by to lead them out of the abyss. Nazi Germany had the Jews and European banking system, and Trump's America has the Muslims and illegal Latino aliens, as they are referred to. Another interesting fact mentioned in the biography is that the Nazis did not need to play the God card in order to get the masses to follow. Hitler and his cronies, Goebbels included, had such deep revulsion towards any form of Christianity. They despised it because their goal was to make the Führer the new Christ or Messiah for Germany's resurrection as a European power once again. This anomaly was not what we here in this American empire have ever experienced. The great and insightful American author Sinclair Lewis said it best 79 years ago with, quote, "When fascism comes to America, it will be wrapped in a flag and carrying a cross," unquote. Sadly, we are on our way to seeing it happen here soon. The Nazi con propaganda has worked so well for the right wing. They have hijacked our wonderful flag and made it a symbol of their perversions. They have hijacked the great avatar, Jesus of Nazareth, and made him the symbol of this born-again empire, as if he would ever bless our illegal and immoral invasions and occupations along with our merciless drone missiles. Their so-called adversaries, the Democratic Party, which great propaganda has labeled as left-wing or liberal or even socialist Marxists, are just more kinder and gentler servants of that same empire. They too kneel at the altars of big business and the Pentagon. Yes, dear friends, fascism with its corporate police state has arrived, and most of us do not even realize it. Of course, our newest emperor with no clothes, Mr. Trump, overtly does the bidding of the deep state that he claims is out to get me. He, along with his predecessors, will assure the super rich that the rest of us, the 99%+, will become the drones that they need to service their beehive. Goebbels, if he is looking up from his lowest point in the cosmos, must be so proud of what his work has accomplished here in America. Thank you.
And now we join in progress another episode of The Americans. The Americans is sponsored this week by Operation Northwoods Deodorant. It hangs in the air long after you're gone. The Americans is also sponsored this week by Gravitas Cologne. If you are what you are, then you ain't what you ain't. Get some Gravitas Cologne today and at least smell like you mean business. Also sponsored by the National Intelligence Agency, Combating Stupidity. Also by Go Your Own Way, Compasses for Republicans. As well as, I think we're alone now, Personal Computers for Americans. The Americans is also brought to us by Razor Wire Dental Floss. It's good for you, really. Crisis Actors of the Homeland, Operation Mockingbird, Operation Northwoods, COINTELPRO, and by Kraft and Blackwater, bringing you Aurora, Tucson, Orlando, the Boston bombing, Sandy Hook, San Bernardino, and so much more. The Americans dream of marshmallow clouds and lollipop lanes in TV towns, while the world wails, fists clenched, tears streaming. The Americans dream of rocket ships, fireworks, freedom, and hallelujah, while they sleep on, through the alarm, the house of fire. The construction is underway for the wall around the Washington, D.C. Beltway to drain the swamp with an impressive culvert system and to separate the White House, the FBI, the CIA, the Pentagon, the Congress, and the Washington Press Corps from normal human beings. Scattered around the job site are the wooden boards to be tacked up all around the new wall with the message, "Let me put it this way. While 9/11 was a deep state operation, probably subcontracting for execution to the Israelis, the entire Washington swamp has been, since 9/11, accomplished after the fact by helping to maintain the cover-up. If this is brought into light, then thousands of political careers are going to crash and burn into the scandal." And now we join in progress another episode of The Americans. FDR had his fireside chats, Kennedy had his moon speech, and Obama had his program, Every Town Gets a Shooting, actually based on the Kennedy moon model. Well, now, President Cosmo Nut is going to get his because he got an idea. Actually, somebody found it written on the back of a receipt going across a Walmart parking lot and sent it to him in case it might be important. But it's his now, goddammit. It's called the Yeah, It Is Tour. President Nutt and Imelda Nutt and many of the staff are going to travel around the country and make a super big deal about all the historical sites that some people are making fun of, and maybe write their names in new cement and make sure everyone doesn't start to really think they are stupid. They might invite Oprah and Ken Burns, Rachel Maddow, Wolf Blitzer, and Dan Rather along and make sure everyone takes it real serious. Back it up, back it up. No, no, no. And the arguing goes on for a while between certain parties about whether to take a truck or a motorcade or the helicopter or Air Force One while somebody already has a moving van coming across the front lawn and now it's stuck. Well, they get on the road eventually, and it's a little bit of this and that. The staff boards a bus, and President Nutt and Imelda climb aboard Air Force One. The first stop is the new national park at Shanksville, Pennsylvania.
Air Force One lands in Shanksville, preceded by a decoy, an Amish horse and carriage just now entering the on-ramp for I-495. The bus is already there in the parking lot for the National Memorial. Everyone's getting ready for the big visit. A speaking platform is set up a long way from where the crowd will be. The planners wanted the crowd close to the snack bar, since the National Memorial uses those funds for a memorial handout stuff. And that's, well, you know, where that was and the platform, well, that's where that was. So, yeah. The President Nutt gripped the railing to haul himself up the steps of the speaking platform to stand behind the podium to address the crowd. He waved to them, saw them waving, then heard their cheers. Yeah, it is. I'm afraid so. Yeah, it is, folks. That's the way it is. And if you don't believe it, well, you are stupid for doing that. President Nutt began his speech. Todd Beamer, Mark Bingham, yeah, they did all that stuff that one day. And look at that gash in the ground. Wow, where all the bodies went into and the plane. Over there is where later the FBI scattered the debris, and now we have this. He raised his fist and made his face go red. Wow. God bless America. More waves and cheers. Let's stroll. Rock and roll. No parole. Goal. Hole. Coal. Knoll. Pole. Soul. These words all rhyme with roll. Waves and cheers. Jay and the Good Americans sang most of the words to the Star-Spangled Banner to the tune of Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer. The local Crop Duster Club did a flyover, and it was everyone go and buy one snack, and we're out of here. The itinerary of the Yeah It Is tour included a viewing of moon rocks in some museum, the Paul Wellstone Memorial in northern Minnesota, the Sixth Floor Museum in Dallas, the bulldozed lot of the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles, the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, where the sniper was gone. Well, the bulldozed lot of the former Sandy Hook School in Connecticut, the cleaned up rubble of the World Trade Center, where the Murrah Building used to be at one time in its existence, the now flat area near Waco, Texas, where the FBI demolished 76 people, men, women, and children, by burning them and then bulldozing everything with camo bulldozers with American flags. Where the plane at one time went through a small hole into the side of the Pentagon, leaving no trace of an airplane, standing on the coast of Maine, looking out at the ocean, where in the ocean Osama bin Laden's body was dumped. Back to the White House, where the podium was on that one day, but now somebody's waxing the floor. So let's stand over here to look at where President Obama, whose name rhymes with Osama, really, seriously, told us Osama bin Laden had been buried at sea just yesterday. Yes, yesterday. That's pretty much it. Said the guy who was planning the whole thing, when the bus arrived back in Washington, and then he hopped down the steps and left. Coming up in our next half hour, we'll hear from Frank Cordero in Des Moines and Richard Flamer in Chiapas. Please stay tuned to Revolution Radio, the listener-sponsored alternative to the lies presented elsewhere, day in and day out.
Moonrock Books. We're a group of scholars, experts, and authors who feel the world really needs saving, and that resisting the American empire is the right thing to do. People are starved for truth. They are given lies. They subsist on lies, but it's not really living. People are not watching TV news. They're ceasing to read newspapers, too, because they know by now they will not find it there. The biggest battle being fought anywhere is with information. If the people can receive the truth, they will do the right thing. We are publishing the truth about Sandy Hook, about the Boston bombing, about the moon landings, about the Holocaust, and much, much more. The truth. It falls upon us to fight the empire and save the world. Join us, Moonrock Books.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
It happens more often than we can imagine. In my case, I was sitting at home, and out of nowhere, I just started feeling uncomfortable. Then it got worse, and I started perspiring. I tried to ignore it, but I waited too long. The chest pain came as we were driving to the hospital emergency. I felt my life clock begin to tick. I barely survived. There was lots of damage done to my heart. What do I do now? I was lucky. I took a leap of faith and tried a 7-herb formula with hawthorn, garlic, cayenne, and more called Extendivite. Herbs have been used for thousands of years to keep us healthy. If you're not using Extendivite as a preventative supplement, maybe it's time to start. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And now for another episode of The Adventures of Deputy and Candidate for Sheriff of Pecan County, Buddy Q. Twinkle. Buddy is patrolling the War on Terror Memorial Highway in South Central Alabama. He's sitting in a grove of trees, can't see a thing. During his lunch hour, he goes to the Walmart in Bugville and buys one pack of gum. He stands at the checkout, staring at the checker, talk like he doesn't understand English, and he can't find his billfold. Then he can't work the card machine and the checker has to come over to his side to help him. Then he drops his card and has to get on his hands and knees to fish it out from under the counter. Meanwhile, a line has formed behind him, stretching back into men's shoes and XXXL gray sweats. Now Buddy is chatting with the checker like they're old pals, and he looks back at the people behind him smiling to see if they got the joke he just told. They did not. Now Buddy excuses himself to get one more pack of gum, then comes back and again tries to work the card machine. Now the line stretches into pharmacy and automotive and out the side of the building. Buddy then tells the checker he guesses he doesn't want the gum. It'll rot your teeth, he says, as he leaves the packs of gum right there and then just slowly walks away like nothing ever happened, whistling Dixie to the tune of Dr. Zhivago. Buddy is a Russian spy. Stay tuned for next week's episode of The Adventures of Deputy and Candidate for Sheriff of Pecan County, Buddy Q. Twinkle, sponsored by Lemon Fresh Borax, also sponsors of On Babushka Kalashnikov's Corner, The View from My Piroshki Cart. When your dogs tell you that the Russians pooped in the hallway while you were at work, we're there for you, protecting the homeland. Lemon Fresh Borax in the fading yellow box. Our next guest of the show is Frank Cordero. Frank Cordero, as always, joins us from the Des Moines Catholic Worker in Des Moines, Iowa. Right now, we're going to hear the conversation between Chuck Gregory and Frank Cordero.
Hey, Chuck, how you doing?
I'm good, Frank. How are you?
Well, what a day for, just these are the times we live in. And Julian Assange soon will be in the hands of the U.S. government. Feeling pretty sad about that. It's just a low. I'd like to say new low, but not really. I mean,
yeah,
the American
really,
Empire.
We have one low after another these days.
So it's just a clarion call that where we're at, and then, of course, the continued soap opera in Washington that I don't know. I do it for entertainment and I'm just hooked into it.
Yeah.
So I get it in junkets at YouTube clips as I'm working the day, picking and choosing, the varieties of news when it all comes down to so much of it is all just the very same stuff one way or the other. If they're playing the political Washington loop shit, they never get out of their box. They just don't. And that's just weighing things. I think there's a process again. I've talked about aging before. I'm mindful of my aging. 68 for many. That's a young year. And for others, that's my God. That's over the hill. whatever your bracket you put it, when you're in your last 30 of life. It's kind of an overwhelming sense of not doing well as a species, just not doing well as a culture.
Yeah.
Just sad. Just a lot of grief. I remember doing it professionally in the 80s when I was a rural priest, and Farm Corps closures, which post World War II were going at 3% a clip every year, you know, and often higher. And if it reached up to 10%, then you're in a crisis. And then we were in a crisis. I got to see these things, firsthand, the dismantling, and understand the scope of how industrial agriculture changed my state, my generation, baby boomers. It's, you know, you live long enough to realize in your lifetime, you all have just fucked up your environment. I mean, that's not a good thing to feel about. I have a sense of dread that we're passing it on to folks, and it's just not fair to them. And I want to pass on something positive. So I'm working on that. I think anybody in our generation ought to be working on that. That's our collective grief and angst to figure out. Gosh, we ought to leave it better than we got it. And since that's not going to happen, we certainly should leave the people who we know and love to take care of the rest of the world when we're gone. A way to do it, at least a path, or some notes that give them an indication. You can turn it around. You just got to do it. You just got to make these kind of sacrifices and beyond.
I would add to that, we have to give them a motivation to do it.
Yeah. All those things.
We have to give them some moral backbone or whatever to where they really want to make a change. And I'm not sure we've done that very well.
No, not at all. Not at all. If we have moral background, it's in defense of this outrageous world we've created. All our champions are on the wrong side. I mean, in my state, Tom Harkin, previous senator, was a progressive anti-war guy. Jim Kerry, the guy, the Massachusetts vice president, anti-Vietnam War guy. I mean, folks who in our generations just jumped into and took on the mantle of the institution, thinking that they could do good inside. I don't see how any of them can claim that. I don't. Serious about face is what needs to be done, and that's not, that sort of thing is not being shown by many people. Certainly not people my generation that I know of, that other than a wacky subculture of the Catholic worker. I mean, we are just some weird folks laying out there. The clear anomaly that proves the case that the U.S. is crazy. But if I were a U.S. citizen, I am a U.S. citizen. This is just not a very good time to be so blatantly ugly on the world scene.
Indeed.
So led by Donald Trump and a political party, a party that are so blatantly just plain ugly. I don't know how to put it. Yeah. Kind of depressing. Hopefully the sun will brighten our day here. I did get a call from Jessica Resnicek, and she's just loving her life at the convent in Duluth. Amazing.
Oh, wow. Great. Great.
Yeah. So that's something that she just got started doing for her. She's going to do 3 months with the Benedictines there. And just find a spiritual center. And that's really great stuff. So I'm all happy for her. And we're birthing the Via Pacis that soon we'll be able to read a public statement that our community has hashed out dealing with our sex scandal we had last summer. That's going to be a very milestone in our communal life. And I think, you know, it does say something to the larger movement. People just don't cover these issues when they happen.
Yeah, right.
So
They bury them. They sweep them under the rug or whatever, you know. And, yeah, to put it out there in print, that's a very brave thing, Frank.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. And so that's that. Looking forward to that duo that coming out. And we've got our May action. Life is full. It's just you sometimes the news of the day can swamp you. And Julian Assange is a capture. My friend Kieran O'Reilly, haven't heard back from him since the news. Don't know what happened to him. I'm sure he put up a nonviolent fight to not let that happen. At least that's, you know, so I await news from him. I guess I was anxious about hearing about him as anxious about knowing that Assange is soon to be in U.S. custody. So
yeah,
that's where I'm at. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
someone dropped a pan at the Catholic Worker, a common occurrence.
Yeah, well, hey, at least it was a metal pan, not something glass, right?
Amen.
Frank, thank you so much for this. And
I just, one more thing. And this is about that. No, Richard Flavor's with us right now in real time. It's Aristelli. They're going to be moving. They're moving on the next couple of days. They're going to get back home. Or no, Aristelli's going to go to Iowa City, spend a few more weeks. And then Richard is going to be flying back. And he said he's preparing to talk to you tonight. So that's what he's doing. And I asked him, or he told me, you know what he told me? He says, Frank, he says he thinks this may will be the last time he'll come up. Mostly because he really can't stand being in this country right now.
Yeah.
Not because of the people he knows. It's just such a bad experience. Yep. Man, that's sad. All right.
It is sad. It is. But yes, I look forward to talking to him later. And, because this is his week. And I did know he was in the States. I didn't know he was in Des Moines. But
you'll be back at our studios and for another clip from the Des Moines studios. So
the Des Moines branch of New American Dream. All right.
Yes. The Midwest branch.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. We'll
thank
you,
Frank. Right. Bye bye.
Our next guest of the show is Richard Flamer. As Chuck and Frank were talking about, we're going to hear now Richard Flamer, who usually joins us from Chiapas, Mexico. But as they were saying, Richard is also visiting Des Moines. So now we're going to hear the conversation between Chuck and Richard Flamer.
This month, I wanted to talk again about the caravans. I wrote a little bit about cultural violence or the roots of the caravans. I don't know if you saw it on YouTube. I did an interview with Roger Ralph on the caravans, and they're coming up in the whole issue of why they're going in caravans and not necessarily in singly or in family units. And I got to thinking about it, and Roger and a number of my friends have asked me about the reasons, you know, for why they're coming up here. And it's a complicated situation that includes things like climate change, which has altered the landscape in Guatemala in a big way. Things that used to grow there can't grow anymore because of the lack of rain. There are any number of reasons for the movements. But in particular, I wanted to talk about the culture of violence. In 1990, I was in Guatemala taking pictures. I was invited to a site called Rio Negro by a forensic friend of mine to take photos of a massacre of more than 700 women and children some years before. the men had been gathered some weeks before and marched up to a nearby military base where they were disappeared. That is, they were never seen or heard from again. The teenage boys were warned by their mothers to stay out in the nearby jungle to avoid a similar fate. A few weeks later, while the boys in the jungle watched, a civil patrol came to the village and started a massacre. After several hours of the rampage, a number of the women were forced to dance and watch while the militia played music, drank, and kept killing. Running low on ammunition, the soldiers started bashing in the heads of the children. That is, they grabbed them by their heels and swung them against the rocks. An earlier investigation nearby had been finished some months earlier by the United Nations. The result of this earlier investigation was completed and then buried in the archives at the behest of the United States, not to be made public. By the time of the Rio Negro investigation, the Catholic Church, through the offices of Archbishop Herardi and Bishop Ricardo Flores, had found the funding to continue the work of the forensic team. The results of the Catholic team were made public at its conclusion and later published as part of a larger four-volume work called Nunca Más, or Never Again. The results were clear. A wealthy landowner, whose brother was a colonel in the army, wanted the land where the village was situated to add to his neighboring farm. The army colonel had ordered the master to get the land for his brother. The colonel, along with most of the upper ranks of the military in Guatemala, had been trained at the U.S. School of the Americas in Fort Benning, Georgia. In San Salvador, also during the 1990s, at the University of Central America, four Jesuits had done much research on the killings and massacre of civilians in the Civil War. Their work had been published internationally. Three of the four were killed, along with their housekeeper and the daughter of the woman, by soldiers sent by Colonel René de Albazan, the same man who ordered the killing of Bishop Oscar Romero. The soldiers and the colonel had also been trained at the School of the Assassins in Georgia. In Honduras, the U.S. built a large base near Palmarola. From that base, the U.S. brought in arms and planes to promote the war in Nicaragua. In the 1980s, the U.S. started sending officers from the Honduran Army and the National Police Force to Fort Benning. The reign of terror in Honduras was accompanied by large-scale fraud in not only arms stealing, but fraud in general. An entire paper mill was stolen from the airport in four containers and later was delivered to one of the Honduran generals who still runs the plant today. The arms ended up flowing to El Salvador and Guatemala City. At one point, Guatemala City had over 40 warehouses filled with U.S. arms that had been delivered purportedly for the use of the Honduran military. As the wars wound down, the U.S. started cracking down on gang violence in the U.S. Specifically, the major Salvadoran gangs would come up to the U.S. Fleeing the violence, met with a different kind of violence when they encountered the Crips and the Bloods. The Salvadoran kids formed the Salvamar Trucha and other gangs to combat the regional gangs of Southern California and Texas. The U.S. started deporting the Salvadoran, Honduran, and Guatemalan gang members back to their countries of origin, where they continued their violence. Though not trained by the School of the Americas, they managed to get their training on American streets. A few countries have managed to curtail the U.S. fueled violence, but what of the thousands of landmines left behind in the Vietnamese landscape? Mines that even now, over 45 years after the war, still keep killing and maiming children. The drug cartels have been armed for years by U.S. companies, or they purchased their arms from the armies of the regions. And now, with a recent executive order signed by President Trump, there will be more arms shipped to Central America. Specifically, Trump has negated that arms sales go through the State Department, which reviews human rights issues, and transferred the sales to only the Commerce Department, with no revision by Congress. Is it any wonder that migrants are fleeing this culture of violence? My own sense is that the wars that I covered, especially in El Salvador and Guatemala, were violent, but somehow there was still some sense of a kind of morality involved. But these days, the violence is so random. There's so many arms on the streets. I recently read of two assaults on buses in the city of San Salvador, where ex-soldiers would climb on the crowded buses holding hand grenades, collect all the money and cell phones from the passengers, and if they didn't comply quick enough, they'd throw the grenade in the crowded bus. Wouldn't know a way for the people to get out. That kind of violence is just rampant these days in both El Salvador and Honduras. Guatemala, it depends on what region you're visiting, but where I've been working for the most part, in northeastern Guatemala, they don't have any gang problems, but they have problems with the national police force, who are just as racist as they were during the war. That is, the racism directed against the Indians, the indigenous. You can't ride a bus in that area, Guatemala, without having it being stopped and reviewed by the National Police Force. You know, reviews are mainly extortion by the police on the passengers. And I think about the people who come up here, so many of the young people have no options. I mean, there's no source of higher education. There are no jobs. The land in part is depleted from poor farming practices. And then you have the United States AID programs, which stress export crops so that they grow snow peas and cauliflower, none of which the people eat in Guatemala. And they had a program that for 4 years encouraged that, giving the farmers seeds and so forth. And then the prices went way down because of Chinese and other imports, so that in the end, those farmers who grew the snow peas and cauliflower ended up having to throw it all out because nobody would eat it and nobody would buy it to import into the U.S. So they then had to return to their traditional crops, which again have with importing corn from the United States, the corn has no value anymore in Guatemala. And so I have my friends and people we know who are leaving for the U.S. In my case, in our little community in southern Mexico, we've had 9 young men out of 90 families who've gone up to the U.S. And, of course, one of the problems is that we don't know what's happened to a couple of them. Some of them have just disappeared. Others are working and sending money back. But it's really, really sad for me. But I don't know that there's any quick solutions. I do know that so far Trump has had no possible solutions in his policy. And the idea of cutting off aid to Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador is just simply ridiculous. How are they supposed to develop if they have no resources for development? But that's enough of my ranting for today.
Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
Ohio Exo Politics will be on from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A. Mark Steyer will have guests on that will discuss many important topics, including the state of the world today. However, much of the show will be dedicated to the writings of Edward Albert Meyer. Let me read a short passage from one of his writings. Love is the highest principle of creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. All of nature in its indescribable splendor is nothing but the love of creation, which is expressed visibly. The love of creation is everywhere, because without it, nothing at all would be able to exist. Please join Mark on Ohio Exopolitics from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A.
It happens more often than we can imagine. In my case, I was sitting at home, and out of nowhere, I just started feeling uncomfortable. Then it got worse, and I started perspiring. I tried to ignore it, but I waited too long. The chest pain came as we were driving to the hospital emergency. I felt my life clock begin to tick. I barely survived. There was lots of damage done to my heart. What do I do now? I was lucky. I took a leap of faith and tried a 7-herb formula with hawthorn, garlic, cayenne, and more called Extendivite. Herbs have been used for thousands of years to keep us healthy. If you're not using Extendivite as a preventative supplement, maybe it's time to start. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest of the show is Jim Fetzer. Dr. Jim Fetzer is a retired philosophy professor. He's a radio show host. His blog is jamesfetzer.org. And now we're going to hear from James Fetzer in Madison, Wisconsin.
Mike, Chuck, good to be with you guys. Yesterday, Attorney General William Barr confirmed under oath that the Obama administration had used federal intelligence agencies to spy on the presidential campaign of Donald Trump in 2016. The response from the Democrats has been all too predictable, claiming that Attorney General's spying claim itself is a conspiracy theory. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, for example, demanded of Barr to retract his statement that spying did occur. According to him, he must retract his statement immediately or produce specific evidence to back it up. Perpetuating conspiracy theories is beneath the office of the Attorney General, but not, it would appear, beneath the office of the Senate Minority Leader and the House Majority Leader at present, or even other high officials, because the whole Russia hoax has been nothing but a conspiracy theory from the beginning. We know it. I've documented it. We have records of it. House Democrats were also pushing the conspiracy theory talking point on Wednesday with Judiciary Committee Chair Jerry Nadler, Democrat in New York, contrasting it to what he said was the fact of Russiagate, and Intelligence Committee Chair Adam Schiff, Democrat of California, calling it another destructive blow to our democratic institutions. Now, what's astonishing is this is already after Robert Mueller's report has been released, and the Attorney General has given a 4-page summary where the report exonerates. Donald Trump from any collusion with the Russians. He was not a Russian puppet. He's not a Vladimir Putin stooge. This was all fabricated. I've been reporting for years now because we've been getting nothing but nonstop propaganda from the mainstream media that this was made up, that in fact we had two investigative journalists who in their book reported already in 2017 that Robbie Mook and John Podesta had introduced the Russian hacking meme first to obfuscate the incompetent campaign they had run, where even Michael Moore was predicting that Hillary would lose because she was neglecting the Rust Belt states of Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, and Wisconsin, which is exactly how it played out, where, in fact, studies by the University of Minnesota and Boston University have confirmed that it was voters in rural counties in those states who had suffered a lot of casualties in the Middle East War who made the judgment, not with certainty, but that it was more likely that Trump would discontinue those wars and get us out of the Middle East than his opponent. Also, to obfuscate the contents of the WikiLeaks revelations that led directly to Pizzagate, where John Podesta himself appears to be pedophile in chief, and to muddy the water with regard to Hillary's own entanglements with Russia through the Canadian company Uranium One, whereby she sold off 20% of U.S. uranium reserves to Russia for a $145 million donation, read that, bribe, to the Clinton Foundation with the approval of Barack Obama. So I say, if Julius and Ethel Rosenberg received the electric chair for sharing U.S. atomic secrets with the then Soviet Union, what do Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama deserve for selling off 20% of U.S. uranium reserves to Russia for a $145 million bribe? Although he was supposed to testify about the Department of Justice 2020 budget, Barr found himself answering questions about the report by special counsel Robert Mueller, which he said showed no evidence of collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. Unwilling to give up the conspiracy theory they pushed for almost 3 years, for which there has been barely a scintilla of evidence, and what they have advanced has turned out to be fabricated, faked, or contrived, Democrats are demanding Barr release the full unredacted Mueller report. I don't trust Barr. I trust Mueller, Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi told AP. He's acting as an employee of the president, said House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer, Democrat of Maryland. I believe the attorney general believes he needs to protect the president of the United States. But the president doesn't need any protection. He didn't do it. It's embarrassingly bad. Barr raised alarms among the Democrats when he told the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee meeting that he believed spying, which he later rephrased as inappropriate surveillance, but everyone understands what he meant, spying fits into the Trump campaign did take place, and that he intends to investigate that fully. Earlier in the day, President Trump had described the Mueller investigation and its FBI predecessor as an attempted coup, saying it was based on the uncorroborated Steele dossier produced by a former British spy for a U.S.-based opposition research firm on contract to the Hillary Clinton campaign, whereas I previously reported it turned out that Christopher Barr himself dumbfounded a judge in London several months ago when he testified that he'd written the dossier and is an employee of Hillary Clinton. John Nolte has observed the whole idea behind the media's Russia collusion hoax was to not allow Trump to be seen as president, as presidential, and most of all, to never allow him to be seen as legitimate. The media and Democrats were desperate not only to overturn the election using lies peddled by the corrupt FBI and even more corrupt intelligence community, where I am convinced that John Brennan himself took a leading role, but to ensure a cloud forever hung over Trump and by extension his agenda. The removal of this cloud, especially by a dirty cop like special counsel Robert Mueller, who is obviously out to get Trump by any means necessary, now allows the public to see Trump as what he truly is, a duly elected president of the United States, the legitimate leader of our country. We will always be a polarized country, which means, barring a 9/11 type event, Trump's approval rating, like Obama's before him, will never break far from 50%, but everything now is about re-election. With a Russia hoax debunked, Trump is a now legitimate president, will be judged like any other president come time for re-election, the economy, the economy, the economy. Let me reiterate that Rasmussen now has shown Trump's approval rating is up to 53%. It was over or at 50% by Rasmussen, who's been by far the most reliable before the midterms, even with 40% among blacks, leading me to predict that Trump would pick up 3 or 4 seats in the Senate and keep the House. It didn't play out that way, and now we know why. There was a hidden variable. New studies have shown that Google adjusted its algorithm to benefit the Democrats and may have shifted as many as 76 million votes. 76 million votes. Now, it's fascinating to realize how tight the connection has been between the Obama administration and the mainstream media. Judge Andrew Napolitano, for example, published this in 2016. You had a hunch the new system was rigged and you couldn't put your finger on it, huh? This might solve the puzzle. ABC News executive producer Ian Cameron is married to Susan Rice, national security advisor. CBS President David Rhodes is the brother of Ben Rhodes, Obama's deputy national security advisor for strategic communications. NBC News correspondent Claire Shipman is married to former White House press secretary Jay Carney. ABC News and Univision reporter Matthew Jaffe is married to Katie Hogan, Obama's deputy press secretary. ABC President Ben Sherwood is the brother of Obama's special advisor, Elizabeth Sherwood. CNN President Virginia Mosley is married to former Hillary Clinton deputy secretary, Tom Nitis. Now you know why it's no surprise the media is in Obama's pocket. Think there might be a little bias in the mainstream? Meanwhile, I recommend check out, it's on YouTube, The Russia Hoax Comes Apart at the Seams, and you'll understand what's going on here and why the Democrats are so desperate to suppress the expose that, in my opinion, is going to destroy their prospects for 2020, where I now predict, when combined with a Jesse Smollett scandal that is tarnishing Kamala Harris, the golden girl who is going to be the Democratic nominee for 2020, I expect Trump to have a quite triumphal reelection when the time comes. Check it out. The Russia Hoax Comes Apart at the Seams on YouTube. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Chuck. Always great to be here with you.
From Richard Dolan, we hear, the moment of disclosure, UFOs, is not the end of anything. It's the beginning of the real fight for truth. We saw demonstrations of 1 million people in Tahrir Square. Don't you think there might be a march of 1 million people on Area 51, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, Los Alamos? Maybe. I'll bet you whack enough security can stop a march of 100 people, but not 1 million, not 1 million. And don't you think that just might happen? And what about opening up a new truth movement? Because after UFOs, then 9/11, JFK, underground bases, you name it, chemtrails, it's all going to be on the table. By God, what an exciting, challenging mess it's going to be. And so, in other words, the moment of disclosure is not going to be the end of anything. It's the beginning for the real fight for truth, not the end. Our next guest of the show is Thomas Wertmann. Thomas Wertmann is the Ohio director of MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, and he joins us each month. And now we're going to try to contact, in Cleveland, Thomas Wertmann.
Okay, well, we're just pulling that up right now here.
Hello?
Well, hello, Thomas. It's Chuck and Mike, the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Great. If you hear me flipping through a little book here, I'm looking at all my notes tonight. Because at work today, I had a video playing in the background. I was writing notes the whole time I'm working. And what this involves is, earlier I talked about the Pentagon case, where the government admitted to running a program from 2007 to 2012 that had roughly about $22 million funding it. Well, the gentleman who ran that program, who managed it, his name was Luis Elizondo. And he ran it until 2017. And he said that when I saw him talk at a conference last year, he said he stepped down because basically he resigned, but he clarified that at a recent conference. He said the reason he resigned was kind of like in protest to the government's secrecy and opposition to investigating UFOs. And he also didn't believe that this program was being taken seriously. Now, he also stated he had to watch what he said because he was being monitored by government officials. He went on to state that the program, after he left in 2017, was still in operation. They may have changed names since then, but it was still ongoing. And he used the word phenomena a lot. He said he believed the phenomena was being observed could pose a potential threat to national security if it wanted to. But he says that right now it appears it hasn't, but it could. Now, he left the Pentagon and joined a group called To the Stars Academy, which was run by a rock performer, but really it has a group of world-class scientists and engineers that are in the group. And the group was responsible. They've got three videos on their site right now concerning military aircraft intercepting these phenomena. And when I saw these videos, according to one of the pilot's conversations, he was talking about tracking these things, moving at very high speeds, making almost like turns that he couldn't stay with in an F-16 fighter that were just really incredible. Well, when I looked at them, some of the stories that the different ones were coming up with weren't making sense. But Elizondo said that some of the videos were taken off the West Coast by fighters from the carrier Nimitz, and that the videos were not taken by David Fazer. They were actually taken by a later flight because of Fazer advising him what he'd intercepted. He had intercepted objects which had traveled from 80,000 feet to sea level, get this, Chuck, in 2 seconds. 2 seconds they traveled that fast. And the government, Elizondo said he didn't release the videos that you saw, that actually they were vetted by the government and they'd gone through the normal process. And he didn't deny that maybe somebody in the government kind of wanted to push this out to the open. But he said when these videos came out, the earlier videos were from, like you say, California area. The last one, he implied it was more in the East Coast. And everything I've been digging up has indicated it would happen either off the coast of Virginia or Florida, potentially by an aircraft carrier called the Roosevelt. So this one happened roughly about 2012, from what I can tell. Now, these objects, he also stated, have been tracked officially up to 13,000 miles an hour. He says unofficially faster. And when he talks about officially, he was implying government tracking systems. He said these objects have been tracked in space, in our atmosphere, and underwater, traveling at these incredible rates. And he says wherever this phenomena is observed, you have to think about, let's say if they're being underwater, you've got the resistance of water against them. But he said these things are moving faster than anything we potentially have underwater. And he says if you think about a craft, rockets, aircraft, submersibles, everything has a shape based on your environment. So like an airplane has wings to support as it flies through the atmosphere. A rocket doesn't need the wings once it's in space. Underwater, you've got to have propellers and stuff to drive it. He said whatever these phenomena are, it's not affected by whatever environment it's in. It can travel basically in all three. He also talked a little bit about the moves that these things are making. He said the human body basically can tolerate 9 G's of force before basically somebody blacks out, even when they're wearing a G suit. He said an F-16 fighter can take 16 to 18 G's before basically it loses structural integrity. But these things are a little bit beyond that, Chuck. He said they've calculated these things are pulling 300 G's in some of the turns they're making. So you're talking like 20 times greater than anything we potentially have. He got off on a subject of basically describing some of the materials that they've recovered in the process of doing investigations, because he said that was one thing the organization was doing. And on some of the materials, he said, implied, I guess you could say, people are assuming that we're recovering metals. So basically what he's saying is not just metals, it's all materials. And all materials may be metallic. It could be maybe something like, let's say, like plastic-like materials, all sorts. And when these materials have been analyzed, he had slides of about a dozen materials. And of these dozen, he said, a couple are real, and all the rest aren't. But he's not going to tell you which ones. But I actually identified some of those. I know some of the cases they came from, and some of the ones were bony. But he said on the unusual ones, he said when they did an isotopic analysis of the materials, the isotopic ratios were unusual. He said if you tried to produce those today, they would be extremely expensive to duplicate, or if they could even be duplicated at all. Another thing he said was if you applied, and I don't know if the exact word he uses was forces, but if you applied force, meaning maybe something like electrical force, could be pressures, these materials reacted in a way that we don't have materials reacting in our technology-based system today. He said they're beginning now to understand some of the, I guess you could say, the physics behind what these things are doing, but now it's a matter of learning how to basically recreate stuff like that. He was also very careful in the talk I watched that he didn't cross the boundary of national security. He mentioned that ATIP, which is the program, Advanced Aerial Threat Identification Program, he mentioned that they're, I guess you could say, what they were created for was, one is basically reviewing these unknown objects, but one of the things that we're looking at, and they made a comment in some of their regulations I saw, is they were looking for stuff up to 40 years in the future. When I saw that comment, that really kind of struck me as strange. Why would they make a comment something like 40 years in the future? Well, during his talk, he clarified that. He said, you know, we're basically looking at something that, let's say, a society 40 years in the future could create. So in his way, he was kind of like implying, well, whatever we're seeing may not necessarily be from another planetary system. It could be almost like from our future or from another dimension of a society 40 years in advancement. So, I mean, I was just listening to this thing, Chuck, and I was just really like sucked in. And I hope he's not blowing smoke up everybody's hind end. But in May, next month, History Channel is going to be now sponsoring a show, producing a show involving individuals from To the Stars Academy. And one of the interviews they're going to be doing on a 6-part episode is talking to Elizondo. And what it appears to me is, basically, as he's given more leash, as more information comes out, not from him, but from other sources, that gives him the room to move a little bit farther in what he says. And I hope he's really being honest. I hope he's really being sincere in what he says, that he wants this information to come out. And again, I hope he's being truthful. But everything that I was watching today was, to me, very impressive. And I'm just hoping that here in the near future, we're going to see more information coming out and being released. He said that already they have videos which aren't released, which are way beyond the three videos that To the Stars Academy's post on their site already. And he said those videos, by the way, were released by the government. So he said these videos of these other objects are even more incredible as they're moving. He says they've even been described as being almost like some of them not necessarily like an aircraft or like a Tic Tac, which had been called, but some appeared to be like a square object. And the square object had some sort of as he defined it, an aura surrounding this craft, or I guess you could say it's this phenomena. So it's really interesting now with what this group is turning up and what's come out from this organization. And he also gave a lot of credit to some of the personnel, some of the senators who helped get the funding started. And then he also gave credit to Bigelow Aerospace for doing a lot of their research and a lot of their legwork, he says, because they did a lot of the research and the investigations out there. And he didn't really define all the objects they recovered, but supposedly at Bigelow Aerospace, an area was built to store potential objects out there that were recovered. And maybe some of the things that he was showing on the slides were some of those objects. So I think we're going to be hitting some interesting times here, Chuck, the way it looks. I'm going to be doing more research in the next month to see what else I can dig up. And one of the things I want to look at is that aircraft carrier, the Roosevelt, the one which had the second videos on there. From what I understand right now, some of the things I've been digging up.
Thomas,
yes.
That was very interesting, and we are totally out of time right now. But
that's fine.
Thank you so much, and wow, that's
next bad time, next bad channel, right?
Yeah, right. You got it.
Okay.
Bye bye.
Okay. See you. Bye.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist, featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Decentralization and bank annihilation. Bitcoin, Litecoin, MoneyCoin, YourCoin, Blockchain, baby. Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern, Studio A.
It happens more often than we can imagine. In my case, I was sitting at home, and out of nowhere, I just started feeling uncomfortable. Then it got worse, and I started perspiring. I tried to ignore it, but I waited too long. The chest pain came as we were driving to the hospital emergency. I felt my life clock begin to tick. I barely survived. There was lots of damage done to my heart. What do I do now? I was lucky. I took a leap of faith and tried a 7-herb formula with hawthorn, garlic, cayenne, and more called Extendivite. Herbs have been used for thousands of years to keep us healthy. If you're not using Extendivite as a preventative supplement, maybe it's time to start. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to
your host.
Well, folks, we're going to deviate a little bit from our original plan here. Back when we were listening to Richard Flamer, we unfortunately were unable to hear the conversation after his column. And so I'm going to get us to that point in the thing, and we're going to listen to what happened after he talked. So here we go. Should be right around here.
For today. Chuck, what do you think?
Richard, I'll tell you, a lot of this is really depressing. I learned a lot from what you were saying. I had no idea of the things like the buses, and that sort of. People are powerless in mostly. I mean, I suppose we're all powerless, but. Up here in Florida, I feel like, at least I don't have to be afraid to ride the bus.
Right.
Yeah.
It's pretty unsettling where we are. We don't have that much violence in Chiapas, but the people, I'm also surprised constantly about the poor and how they help their brothers and sisters. Yeah. And we see families taken in all the time. One friend of ours is a carpenter down the road. He found a young couple who had just recently had a baby, and the child was sick, and the mother came to this carpenter and asked him, could he help? And he said, well, sure, why don't you come on in? And the next thing you know, the young family's living with this other carpenter. I mean, this carpenter doesn't have any money. He can barely feed his own family.
But, Richard, I've observed in my whole life pretty much that the people who don't have much of anything are the ones who are most willing to share what they have with other people.
Yeah. And so we continue to try and do what we can. We have money for medicine, which we dole out every month. And I'm paying for the scholarships for the young girls from Guatemala to go on to school. And I'm so proud of those girls. They're, one's in the university now, and one's a certified public accountant, and two more have come back and are kindergarten teachers. I'm just thrilled.
Yes, you should be. Well, Richard, thank you so much. Thank you so much for sharing this with us. I always look forward to hearing from you. It's always a fresh viewpoint, and often a scary one and depressing one, but that's okay. I look forward to hearing it anyway.
Thank you so much. And just a small, short note. I don't know if you've read of him or read him, but Blaise Bonpain out of Los Angeles just recently died. And he was a wonderful commentator, Marinol, who did a column, a sort of column out of Pacifica Radio on Central America. Terrific man. And I'm happy to say he was my friend. Good man.
All right. I'm going to look for him. Thanks again, Rick.
Okay.
Good night.
You bet. Good night.
We are so fortunate to have Richard Flamer as a regular columnist on our show. Certainly glad to hear from him. Well, it's been another long week in Moon Rock Lake, Ohio, my hometown at the end of the empire. Tonight at the Moon Rock Lake Public Library, they'll be reading from the best-selling book by Moon Rock Lake's self-published author and dog catcher, Solomon Sendak, entitled Sweat, Global Warming in a Small Town, and Other Tales of the Great American Eastern Middle West. An excerpt is kindly sent to us by Moon Rock Lake Public Librarian Doris Schmorris. It's cold today. That's good, right? It's always good when it's cold, because that means there's no global warming yet, right? Well, anyway, there was a town, Juniper Junction, not too far from Moon Rock Lake, had a warming scare not too long ago. The story's all about the folks in Juniper Junction. Tommy, Robert S. Thompson, the waitress, Carl with his college in his basement, and Gutner and Jesse and the old people Grain Elevator Casino. And the radio station wanting everyone to wear sweatpants to stick a middle finger in the air to global warming. And then, sort of like the Lindbergh baby, well, sort of not. The Sox baby has been stolen. Maybe by that Laverna, the woman at the bank drive-up. Maybe by the Foods, who own Foods Food. Maybe not. Jesse and Carl are trying to capture the Foods because they think they took sweat socks. Gutner and Ron Waters in the light blue Robin's Egg Blue pickup are chasing Steve, the Incredible Pizza Dude, all around town because they think he took sweat socks. Things tend to get complicated quickly in a small town when you're not that used to complicated things. Anyway, let's get back to our story. Kind of steamy, not like daytime TV, but like sweaty, hot, sweaty, like moisture under your arms, other places, sweat. Overall, ubiquitous, omnipresent, universal, global warming in a small town. What has happened up to now? Well, a lot, I would say. We find that in Juniper Junction, the local radio show has the whole town wearing sweatpants to fight global warming. And sweat socks, local baby of local gym teachers, Jim and Bobby Socks, has been stolen. Some think it was the Foods who owned Foods Foods. Did they take sweat socks to get back? Get back at Americans for taking so many Korean babies? Well, some say it was Laverna at the drive-up window of the bank. Some say it was the pizza delivery guy because he refuses to wear the sweatpants. OMG, what will it be next? I was riding past the deli windows of Foos Foods. I could see Professor Carl and Jesse sitting in there in disguise. Carl was wearing a headdress, eagle feathers, war paint, smoking his pipe. Jesse had on a pilgrim's costume with his yellow firefighter helmet. Probably the people who rented the costume before turned it back in without the hat. It's happening. They're all coming for the pizza dude. There's pitchforks, blazing, brooms, and torches made out of rags and yardsticks. Screaming, somebody tossed a rope over the stoplight. There's old people and little people, everything in between. They're going to burn the whole town down if that's what it takes to find them. Before they burn them and hang him, they're going to, well, a couple of fat people, that they're going to sit on his legs and arms and make him put on sweatpants. Pull the waist string. Tight as it'll go. Then a little bit more. Well, actually, what's going to happen, I think somebody's going to call in an order for a large Supreme, and when Steve shows up to deliver, they might try to tackle him. Then they'll either try to de-pants him or pull the gray sweatpants over his shorts. I think they're hoping he'll be worried that anytime he walks up to a door to deliver a pizza, there could be people waiting to take him down, sit on his arms, put sweatpants on him, pull the strings pretty tight. tighter than normal. Carl and Jesse were watching the booth. Mary Wu was behind the cash register, and Kung Stu was hurrying around and serving a line of customers at the breakfast bar. I don't see nothing suspicious about that, but I've not taken the CCC trained neighborhood observer course either. It's now part of the adult ed curriculum. Anyway, people are hoping that Steve will give in to the pressure and everyone can relax. I was just in talking to Moonwalking. She's pretty smart. Pretty and smart. She's beautiful. She's the head librarian. Her hair is braided into dreadlocks. She doesn't mind talking to kids. I found that out the time I went in there for summer reading, Harry Potter week. I was the only one who came. Moonwalking didn't mind. We spent the whole week wearing wizard robes she made with stuff her mom had. We made brooms and potions. She said I was Harry. She was Hermione Granger. It was a blast. Moonwalking is an activist, she told me. She's a junior at JJHS. She's an anti-global warming activist. Only one there is. She doesn't wear the sweatpants. She wears, like, pajamas and beads. She's got earrings in her tongue. Ears. Other places. She smells like cinnamon and lilacs. MW Head Librarian. That's what the wooden name plaque says on the front desk. She got the job when she showed up to volunteer and there was nobody there. There was a cigarette burning. Hot coffee in the pot. Coats on the hangers. A hat on the floor. There was poop in the pot and bites in the rack. The librarian abduction. So she stayed. She became the head librarian. It's a big job for a high school student, but she seemed to like it. Like Don the cop and Nona the waitress. I don't know what they're like when nobody's around. Maybe they throw things. We knew about the Walmart greeter at the time, MW says. We could have called him in to CSI the library, but she cleaned, so we can't. MW says global warming is nature fighting back. She says it's bears shooting hunters, skinning them, gutting them, and geese dive bombing those big whitish green hunks of poop into hunters' mouths, rivers puking up blood, fields rolling and bucking like a horse and throwing the farmer into the ditch with a big gash in his head, maybe cross his arms. She says it's the wood stabbing a lumberman in the stomach with 3, 4, sometimes 9 guys on one pokey branch. Sometimes I walk her home from the library on my bike. She doesn't seem to mind. She likes everybody. Hello, Robert S. Thompson, reporting from the flood area. You've heard it said, the saying, if the creek don't rise, well, a goddamn creek has risen. There is water running down every gutter in Jennifer Junction. As for now, my bench appears safe, but for how long? Jenny Creek has filled and overflowed. No thanks to the melting north and south poles and the chunk of Greenland broken off and free in the Atlantic the size of Uruguay, the Channel 14 weatherman now finally tells us. My toes are wet. Oh, nice. Here we go. You know, no one can find a big sweat. Many of our citizens have been forced by circumstances to form improvised gray sweatpants with the red script Fighting Angus logo. Well, make them out of bed sheets, overhead awning, Boy Scout tents, parachutes, whatever's at hand. Not the same. Maybe it has something to do with Jenny Creek. Hard to think rationally with minnows and carp swimming past. Not normal. Not so stay frozen either. Not in the meat freezer at Kim and Tony's. Not in the refrigerators, back porch freezers, in any of the homes. Some people have taken to wearing 6 and 7 pairs of sweatpants to try to reverse events. But no more by the end of the week, I'd imagine. Guttner and the Gray Sweats have intensified their efforts to capture Steve. So much is happening. I guess the Poos are no longer suspects in the Sox baby case. The Poos did not know that the Sox had a baby, since they're always working. They would also like to get a Korean baby sometime, they said. And there they go. That's the third time they've gone by, not stopping for the light. Old ladies, dogs, nothing. Guttner and Ron Waters and the light blue Robin's egg blue pickup. They're chasing Steve, the incredible pizza dude, all around town. Pizza Man has attained a sort of cult status around town. The dude who would not die because he was somehow able to escape being captured during delivering the cheese, a small, thin crust. It's now on permanent display in the front desk case of the library. Behind Guttner was Don in the black and white, with lights flashing, sirens, of course, full blast, windows down so he can smoke during the pursuit. Steve stopped at a light, and some old people toughs jumped in the back seat. He was zipping and sliding and swerving, coasting through stop signs. He was busy, like that song my grandpa had him play at his funeral. Faster horses, younger women, bigger sweatpants, and more pizza. Here balancing on my bike with my foot on Robert S. Thompson's bench. Robert S. talks to Nona, who came out for a cigarette break when she heard all the commotion. You think they're just about to catch him when he puts it up in that extra Jap gear, says Robert. He doesn't see them, says Nona. He's in the zone, I say. When he's busy, just total Buddhist detachment. When it's over, it'll be like he just woke up. It's unconscious, like a basketball player. Can't miss from anywhere on the court. Confidence, said Robert F. Thompson. Watching him roar past again, Nona shook out a cigarette, offered it to Robert S., and he took it. She offered her lighter, too. How are you doing through all this? Some of our NASCAR buffs come out to stand in the streets and on the roofs and hoods of their pickups. Ron in the morning was given a play-by-play each time they roared past the radio station big window. The bar started happy hour 5 hours early. And just as Rick Waters was unloading a big brown box with a Made in Japan stamp on the top and sides, from a stone black SUV with darkened windows, Steve and the newly customized pizza car with a spinning pizza on top squealed once more around the main street, four corners. He went right between two sets of elderly chicken fighters holding each other on their shoulders. They do that in the pool, well, everywhere now. Guess it's the new thing in the middle of the street. He rammed the curb, and the impact threw him way left, just missing the front window sweatpants display and Rick's sporting goods store. Rick did not see Steve's flying, spinning pizza mobile. He just sliced open the big box from Nagasaki with two dozen Infinity X sumo sweatpants with the customized Fighting Angus logo under the waistband. Rick held up a pair in front of him like a toreador to examine the new stock. Right behind Steve came Guttner in the city truck like a bull right through the sweats into Rick. Truck shoved Rick all the way through the store, slamming into the rear concrete wall. Behind him came Don in the cruiser, windshield smeared thick with blood. Don had been unable to miss the four old people. Police car cut the old guys at the waist, flinging them and their lovely ladies onto the windshield, bouncing high and then smacking the pavement. When you see it for real, it's a lot faster and worse sounding and looking than just trying to imagine it. When you just think about something like that, your mind shows it to you way slowed down to make it not so bad, but it's very bad. So the denouement, as Carl says, is that Rick Waters was crushed against the concrete wall by Guttner City pickup. He broke his back, or rather, Guttner broke Rick's back and hips, and Rick got a concussion where he was goofy for a while, and his tongue swelled way up. But boxes and boxes of size small sweatpants along the wall probably saved his life. They took him by helicopter to Jeremy Junction, and the helicopter radio was tuned to My Midget Music Hour, is what I hear. All four of the old people ended up dying in the middle of the street. Gunslingers laid low by new technology. Their heads exploded like smashed watermelons. Jesse came in a hurry in the fire truck to help, and so did William in the ice cream appendectomy mobile. Then they buried the old dead people that Don hit with the cruiser. Don's not going to jail. He didn't even lose his job. He got a promotion to a 2-star sheriff. New one on me. And he got a new cruiser. Insurance paid off. This one's got a cattle catcher on front. Folks love it. They point and smile, glad that somebody finally stood up to the old people. Rick's in a body cast. All he can get on are sweatpants. He sits in a chair in the front window of his store. Got wide eyes. They say he's still got a concussion. You walk up close, you can see he's got a shotgun on the floor by his chair. My feeling is he's going to shoot the first pickup that jumps the curb. Maybe Sweat. Well, yeah. They did let Laverna go. She wasn't too happy. She's back at the bank drive-up. Some people see larceny in her eyes when they pull up. Some see murder. Some see lust. Some see a Luxembourg mountain scene. I see pain. I see real hurt. Guess there wasn't a baby Sweat socks. They made it up. They wanted a baby so bad, they just talked themselves into being pregnant, talked about it to themselves and then other people, and then they had to have it because it was time. And then they couldn't have it go to school because there wasn't a kid. Then they didn't want it to die because that was way too sad, so they decided to have it be kidnapped. They thought it would go away eventually, but well, you know, that could never happen in a small town. And that's the news from Moonrock Lake, where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats and journalists are cowards, and all the Homeland Security, COINTELPRO, lone gunmen are about average. And that wraps up another episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. We thank you for joining us tonight. We hope you will be back with us next week and every week, right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Thank you, Mike, and good night.
Thanks to you, Chuck, for all you did to make the show happen. And thanks to our guests, Richard Flamer, Thomas Wortman, Jim Fetzer, Philip Ferruzio, and Frank Cordero. Please visit New American Archives at newdream.us, also Penn Magazine, PENM Magazine.us. If you'd like to donate to the Des Moines Catholic Worker, write to Phil Berrigan House, 713 Indiana Avenue, Des Moines, Iowa, 50314. And so good night to my friends, Chuck and Lorraine. Stay warm down there. Good night, Mrs. Kalbash. Good night, Todd Beamer. Good night, Mark Bingham. Good night, Timothy McGrain. Good night, Charlie Hebdo. Good night, Don Hawksprung. Good night, Ken Lay. Good night, Muhammad Atta. Good night, Omar Mateen. Good night, Noah Posner. Good night, Crystal Campbell. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
Where have all the flowers gone? Long time passing, where have all the flowers gone? Long time ago, where have all the flowers gone? Girls have picked them, everyone. When will they ever learn? When will they ever learn? Thank you, everyone. Good night.
after this message.
Welcome to Revolution Radio, where you, the listeners, are in charge. Here at Revolution Radio, we present 48 broadcast hours of news and information each and every day. Revolution Radio never sleeps. Revolution Radio is worldwide and borderless information. Revolution Radio is also commercial free. Revolution Radio is supported 100% by you, the listeners. And that's why we appeal to you to donate and support this station and its expenses. You can support us in many available options like archive subscriptions, our seed pack selections, or even my woodworking store. And we also even have Revolution Radio's swag at the Revolution Radio Zazzle store, in which you can get t-shirts, coffee cups, even a baby onesie. Or you can just plain donate to the cause. We cannot continue without your support, and your support is what helps pay the bills. So please, if you wish us to continue, please stop by our station support page and drop a dime on us. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. Have the necessary information to assist you in confidently living through just about any survival situation. Is survival and gardening, off-grid living, medical knowledge, or even natural or man-made EMPs on your list of personal concerns? Do you have your documents and your personal information in a safe place in your hands where you know where it is? Well, check out our preloaded EMP-proof thumb drive. Over 3 gigs of survival documents and how-tos, plus the USDA offline food preservation website, and much, much more, including a surprise bonus we just can't tell you about here. With plenty of room left over to store your most important documents, imagine if a megavirus or a computer failure took out your bank or all the banks.